Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
Let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamic Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the UR Tennis Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. You are on the UR Tennis Network, and you will be hearing a great show tonight. We just had a super weekend here at the Laurel Park Tennis Center. We had a wonderful high school coaches seminar. I had some of the just finest coaches in the country: Jerry Baskin, Chuck Creasy, Ned Caswell, some of the headliners, myself, Tabani, and I spoke as well. So it was a fantastic weekend. And right after that was over, we jumped in the van and headed down to the USTA's Southern Tennis Association annual meeting, where they held a listening session. The president of the USTA was in, Lou Brewer was in. All the big wigs from the USTA were here to listen, to see what everybody had to say about tennis. And it's great to see this kind of stuff going on. If you want to call in, the number to call in to our show tonight is going to be 714-583-6853. And you can get this on the iTunes. You can get it on your iTunes device or a device that has iTunes on it as a podcast. Or you can also go to my blog at CoachJPWeber.com. And when I get back, I'll tell you a little bit more about today's guest. I have in the studio with me great American tennis coach Chuck Creasy, and we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll get on the phone and get with our guest and have a good time this evening. So look forward to being right back.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Brothers, my bumper music that I play every week, you know, on the outside, you know, on the inside looking, you know, or looking out, I guess, or on the outside looking in. Here in the southern section, so much is going on with tennis. Today we had a listening session, and down at the listening session, so many great coaches came down to talk. The USTA guys were fantastic. I thought it was a wonderful meeting. While I was down there, I met a gentleman who is the chairman for the United States Tennis Association's Southern Committee for 10 and Under Tennis, Julien Gaudreau, I hope I pronounced that correctly. Coach Creasy was there, and Julio's going to be on in just a few minutes with Coach Creasy. You're here in the studio with me. We had a great weekend, a super weekend. You drove 750 miles in the F-150, brought Richard Reyes. Richard Reyes came down with you. He's hanging out. Are you tired?
Oh, to say the least. That was an action-packed weekend, JP. And, you know, the thing is, I really need to thank Richard for spending the time. It was a tough, tough situation for him as he lost his mother this about a week and a half ago. And it was just a good – we had some bonding time and look forward to the trip back as – you know, what a fantastic man, and he's helped so many people up there in the New York metropolitan area. But he lost his mother, so, you know, he and she are in our thoughts and prayers for sure. Yeah, it was a fantastic weekend. I was real impressed. Again, what the USTA is doing is unprecedented. They have never gone to every section like this and really dug down deep at a gut level and listened to exactly what everybody had to say. And, you know, I think this is so healthy. And I always say there's no motion without emotion. And, you know, people need to be heard, and they are listening, and it's fantastic. So I'm very happy.
Looks like Julio's calling in. Let me see if I can catch him. Julio, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm right here. Thanks
How
for having
doing?
Me. I'm doing well. I'm sitting at a terminal waiting to catch a flight.
Now, Julio, you're in Mississippi. You're from Mississippi. You came up for the meeting this afternoon. What are your thoughts on the meeting that the USGA conducted here in Atlanta?
I think it's like Coach Creasy said, it's amazing, and it's very emotional rewarding to see them actually go out of their way to listen to what we have to say and listen to our opinions. I think it was fabulous. It was a great occasion.
Have you been to any of the other meetings?
No. This is the first one that I've been to. But I understand that all the other ones have been similar to this one.
Coach, have you been to any?
Yeah, I was at the Mid-Atlantic one, and in the same thing there. Scott Schultz and Lou Brewer up there. And, you know, and they're just asking for ideas. They got their notebooks out, and they're writing them down. And you know, people want to be heard and you know, get things off their chest. And, you know, this is a tremendous, tremendous start. And in the end, it's not the little bitty things. It's just that people want a voice.
Now, the way it was reported, several of the other meetings, I don't know which number this was. They've got two more. I thought this was the last one. They've got two more, Julio. But the way it was reported to me, maybe you and Coach can comment on it, or I've been reading about it, it was fairly contentious, the other meetings. I found this one to be just very refreshing. I don't know. What did y'all think, Julio?
Yeah, I understand that a couple of the other ones have gotten quite heated. This one, I think it was the people that were there representing the Southern section were very organized in what they were presenting. They made their points, and they were kind of thankful that the USDA was there present and willing to listen instead of getting aggressive with them.
What was your thought on at least the atmosphere?
Well, you know, there's some psychology here that is really important. I mean, in team building, you know, all those years that I coached, I always knew that you never really had a team until you get down and dirty with your team. And usually strong people do great things, and you don't do things by passiveness and waiting around for them to happen. So what happens when you get five or six bulls in the same room, or, you know, so many roosters in the same hen house, as they say, there's going to be some disagreement and things. But what happens when the dust settles is people talk about it. And, you know, I think Washington, D.C. could sure take a lesson from what's going on here. I felt that people got up and said what they needed to say. They didn't feel afraid or inhibited about saying things. And, you know, and this is what we need.
Julio, when we got there, you were bringing up quite a few points. What were you mainly looking at going to the meeting and then talking about?
I was curious to find out what were their points for the changes that we're trying to implement. And they expressed that two of the points were I thought were very curious, which was schooling, so the children will miss less school, and cost, so the parents won't have to spend as much. And last time I checked, we live in America, where it's left up to me how I want to school my children is my problem, not theirs. And how much money and how I spend my money, it's my problem as well, not theirs. And when I look at all these tournaments, they're not suffering a participation, so it's not that they're empty and people are not being able to afford to go. They're all pretty much full, and they usually have a waiting list. So why are they coming to tell me that how I need to save my money or how I spend my money?
Julio, where you went to Duquesne University, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And where are you from originally?
Puerto Rico.
You're from Puerto Rico. What? Now, tell me a little bit about the tenant. You're on a, and you, Julio's got to catch a flight, so the show usually starts at 6, and I'd seen you in the hallway there. Bill Ozaki introduced me to you. You're a USTA high performance coach, and you've worked with the PTR as a tenant under certified coach. The Southern section has you as the chairman of the committee, so I'm really eager to talk to you a little bit about this. I jumped at the opportunity to have you come on. Tell me a little bit about what you do for the USTA in the Southern section with regard to tenant under tennis, and tell the listeners.
I help them give ideas on what we're doing. From the technical aspect, the competition aspect, the social competition, if you can call it, the junior team tennis, and all the grassroots stuff that we're trying to do to grow the game so we have more kids playing and participating.
Did you so it's not only growing the game in the Southern section, it's probably gone a step further than just growing the game, right? I mean, you guys have actually implemented it as a sort of player development portion to that. In other words, growing the game is one aspect of it, but then it's also how we're playing tournaments and doing a lot more stuff. If you have a 10 and under training with the USTA, it's probably going to be done with an orange ball, would I say? I mean, is that right? Would it be done with a green ball, orange ball? How would y'all do that?
Usually we do probably about 75% to 80% of it with the orange dot, and then we will do probably about 20% of it with the green dot.
So you're looking at different things. Now, Julio, we've been going around here on this quite a bit, trying to look at it from my vantage point, from the way that I see it. I think all the 10 and under tools are great. I want you to use every tool you can. Let me play for you. There's a couple of things that have come up. I've got a clip here. Now you got the guy that runs things nationally, Craig Jones, was on the show. You're familiar with Craig, right?
Yes, sir.
He was on the show, and he had a few words to say, and we were asking him some questions about. And here's what he had to say. Let me see if I hope this is the right clip. Let me see if I got it.
I've got to go to parents of 4 and 5 and 6 year olds and say, over the next 10 years, you're going to spend about $100,000 to $120,000 on player development. And I've got to be able to point them to some research online that shows absolute evidence that from a player development perspective, the 10 and under is better. So how do I direct them to prove to them that this investment...
All of you know the answer. All of you know the answer to that question. You know, this is any type of a thing that's going to be, I don't even call it, well, it's an innovation, but, you know, Roger Federer did not grow up in a competitive structure that involved this. He grew up in a training structure, you know, in Hinnon, the competitive structure, but not to the extent they have now. So, you know, in terms of empirical data and those kind of things, I mean, I can give you some things that would be more of, you know, weight of the ball and other things like that. But what we're all interested in is who developed in the system. And nobody can really say that. It's the same thing as talking about the point system back when they changed 8, 9, 10 years ago. I mean, Florida did it and some other, but, you know, there wasn't great proof. some people say Texas is an example of failure from earned advancement. Other people were saying that England's a failure from 10 and under tennis. But I can tell you in England, they switched in 2007, and what's coming out of there now is scary. But no, nobody can say from a competitive standpoint that there's data on that. You know, I can't point to a competitive structure right now that can say they've been doing it for 20 years and look at what they've done. But I can give you a lot of countries that do it in the training, and I know Coach Creasy said he trained it, you know, back 20 years ago with it, but it was done a lot more in Europe than it was in America 20 years ago. So, no, you ask a great question, and it's tough to come up with that data. You know, I'm going to get quoted, JP, on that. There's no empirical data thing on those questions. It'll be interesting to see if we start firing off on blogs and all.
Hey, Julio, could you catch that?
Sir.
Was that did that all come out?
Yes,
pretty
I
good
got
point?
That.
So
yes.
Here we have this is the national guy, and he's saying to us that there's no research, and yet we've come up, or we're as coaches we're facing. I know that it's not telling you how to coach per se, but there is a mandate out there, and you and I spoke about it. You're a proponent of the mandate, is that right?
Yeah. If you're gonna do it, you have to commit to doing it. If you don't commit to doing it, then we're not gonna be able to look back on 5, 6, 7 years from now and decide that whether it worked or it did not.
So. You're on it, you're doing it, we're doing it, and there's no research. Are you not worried at all about what might could happen?
No, because, I mean, I know Coach Creasy has been coaching a lot longer than I have. I've been at this now for about 20 years. And right now, I personally coach the kid that's number one in the South in the boys' 10s and the girl that's number two in the South in the girls' 10s. And the results that I'm being able to accomplish with these kids because of the modified equipment and development compared to what I can do with them if I put them on a regular court with a regular ball, which we do train them also on, it's remarkable. I mean, I'm being able to work these kids. We're developing transition. We're developing making. We're developing overheads. We're developing all these things prior to hitting puberty and closing the ability to really develop motor skills at an optimal situation. Where in the past we would have developed almost half a player that through lessons we develop approach situations and we develop met situations, but the moment that it went into a match play situation and a competitive one, they would pretty much pin themselves back at the baseline. Let's see who can hit the highest, heaviest ball, and let's see who becomes the best one at recognizing of that high, heavy, which one's the short one, that then I can move forward and somewhat attack. And by the time I get to the net, what comes back is sitting duck because my approach was so strong, because what I'm coming in behind is so strong. And the argument can also be made for the other, because you got in the back end, when you look at the history of tennis, you got all the great guys that volleyed better than what we have right now on tour, like a McEnroe, Stefan Edberg, and so forth. And you can say, well, they might not have been developed with that format. We don't really know if they were or were not. We're just kind of taking a guess. But I can tell you that my personal experience from working with the kids, it allows the kids at a much younger age to develop an all-around game instead of being one-dimensional and developing the other segment of their game simply through lessons and ball feeding, but not being able to implement it on point play situations. And then all of a sudden when they get to be about 15 or 16 and physically they get big enough, then we were trying to add on in point play situations this set, next segment of coming in and moving forward.
Coach, do you have any thoughts with regard to what he's saying? I'm looking at the research part of it, nothing else other than just that right now. And he's mentioning his personal experience. And can you give some insight?
JP, it's a great teaching tool, and all coaches should look for great teaching tool. So I don't disagree at all with that. I'd like to credit you, Julio, first of all, for calling out the panel up there today about the money and too much travel and too much time for the parents and saying that that's freedom and that's a person should be able to say that. Basically, and here's the way I read it with the no BS approach, is that those are the talking points that the USTA, those are political talking points. We're trying to save classes. We're trying to save the parents from hotel rooms and all that. And that sounds nice. But just as well, the talking point for the green ball has been that, oh, well, it's increasing the membership and all the play, and it is so much better. And I'll be the first to tell you, Julio, that I've used a version of the green balls for probably 15 to 17 years. Tut Bartson told me back, the racket revolution is what screwed everything up. We all know that. Back in the late 70s, the racket revolution with the Princes and the wide bodies, and not so bad with the Princes, but the wide bodies made it to where the symmetry was destroyed in the game. That, let's get back to that. This is when the USTA probably should have stepped in and said, wait a minute, ball striking has overcome movement. It's never, it's no longer a symmetrical game. It used to be 4 seconds for me to ball to you and for it to come back if we were top pros. Now it's 2.2 seconds according to Vic Braden's research, or 60 miles an hour or 10 balls in 10 seconds. And so the point being is that I used to, the players could not keep the ball in the play and they checked out and they never learned how to construct points. So therefore, Tut Bartson told me one time he used to use dead balls a lot. I know that coaches like Jerry Baskin always had a basket of dead balls. I always had a basket of dead balls, and I propped the nets up and made the courts more narrow and made players play through each other. So I'm a proponent of training with them. I use green balls for highest level players, pro players or highest level college players. They learn how to play at faster tempo because they don't molest the strokes on the wings. They do not molest the strokes. However, after saying all this, again, this is the United States of America, and I never thought I would get involved in these battles over 10 and under tennis, which we need. But again, as I mentioned so often, even when they invented sliced bread and it was the best thing in the world, they allowed people to slice their own. And with this mandate that they have had and the elimination of 10 and under yellow ball tournaments, they crossed the line. And if they don't understand that they crossed the line, they got to go back and really take a good look about what freedom is about for our teaching pros. And even if these pros buy into this stuff, and they think it's the best thing ever, the point is that whenever a system is dictated to teaching, it's like Washington dictating to our classroom teachers, no child left behind, or these type of things. You hamstring the creativity, the will, and the heart, and you compromise the heart of the teachers. So the mandate is what's wrong. They should have a dual process. They should have a graduation process from the yellow, the green ball to the yellow ball for the better players, and that's all they would need to do, you know. But to drink the Kool-Aid and just say it's the best thing going, that's completely wrong.
Well, obviously Julio, he has some strong feelings about that. Now, so we got Julio, we got Craig saying that there's not any research. You got coach's argument about freedom. How does that strike you? Because you're on a committee that determines a lot about the way it's going to be implemented in the Southern section.
You still have the freedom. I mean, you can select to bypass playing 10. They're not telling you that you cannot play up. They're just telling you that you're going to.
But Julio, the problem is, kids, you don't learn to win by losing. You know, you learn to win by winning. And regardless of the arguments, whether it's right or wrong, they've changed the whole dynamic of, look, you have Michael Jordan. He's 8 years old. You got an 8-foot goal and a 10-foot goal. Which one do you think he wants to play at? This is the way our kids think, too. Anybody I know as an 8 or a 10-year-old, nobody wants to be on the B team. And the green ball and this orange ball, they're B team tools. Not for teaching. They're the best teaching tools ever. But for playing and competing, you know, the kids do not want to be on the B team and playing with, you know, they want to be playing on the 10-foot goal.
Julio, I go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and react.
That's okay. I was going to answer. Coach, my personal experience, and I run a pretty big 10 and under program down here, the boys actually do not want to play 12s. They rather continue to stay in the orange court. The girls, on the other hand, seem to be the ones who do not like the 10 and under. They want to move up and play on a regular ball. I'm finding that in common for the most part. So no, all the kids are not perceiving it as a regression. Some of them are perceiving it as a progression, and they're seeing what they're capable of doing versus the other format of play limiting them because of their size.
What about the argument, Julio, from a developmental standpoint, why was age, you know, I've had a few people that have said to me, why don't we just, instead of making it an age situation, do it like Taekwondo or karate. You start out with a green belt,
white belt.
Start with white belt, and then you got to move.
Age related, never age determined.
Yeah, age related, not age determined. But you have Vic Braden was on the show, and he said, you know, that was one of his primary concerns. He said the girls are going to be developing in a different. Why was it picked in your mind? Were you there when they were picking it? Why was 10 picked? Why was 10 and under picked as the age to do this with?
Now, before I give you my opinion, I want you to know that I was not in the process at a USDA level that I selected that it was going to be this way. I'm just part of the group that has decided to drink the Kool-Aid. I would have to say that from a biological standpoint, it has to do with growth and development of the human being, because the biggest aspect of the orange ball and the reduction of the court size percent is the ability for the kid physically to cover the court and handle the situations and play.
Now, there's no... Now,
girls are more mature, though, JP. That's the biggest point. Boys don't read as well as girls till about, like, the fifth grade. They don't process things as well. Girls mature much quicker through that age, and that's just
that's fine. And I think from an anecdotal standpoint, I think those are nice stories. It remains to be seen as to whether or not, to me, Julio, for example, I've used a lot of this stuff, but I've found that it can be more efficient not using that. You can probably use it for a while and then move on. There are some kids who are 6, 7, 8 years old who are doing very well. They can play very, very well with a yellow ball. Why should they have to hold back and not be allowed to play with the yellow ball?
Well, the system's not holding them back. If they can play very well with the yellow ball, they can play up.
Now here in the Southern Section, okay, so help me. Here in the Southern Section, it's not just used, I mean, you know, where you're doing it. I mean, they've got to stick, they can't use a yellow ball until they turn 13 years of age.
No,
see, in other sections,
mm-hmm.
Maybe it's until you're 10, but, but here in this section, you're going to go from orange to green, and then when you get to be 13, you can play in a level 4 and use a yellow ball. And the level 4 is the most popular tournament that's out there. That's the one that most people play with.
No, I mean, I don't know what you're getting this, JP, because in the Southern Section, all 12 and under tournament play, at I believe level 4 and above, it's regular ball.
At the elite level, but if I've got a kid... Let's say a kid, he's 8 or 9 years old, and he's pretty good. If he wants to play up and play with a yellow ball, he's got to play up with the 14-year-olds, 14 and under. He can't play with 12 and under because they would use green dot balls.
No,
if he wants to play yellow ball,
dot.
He's got to go 14 and under. And that's a huge – I tell you what, let's see. We've got two callers on here. I've got one caller, a 571 number. Let's take a call, Julio, and see what the 571
– Go ahead.
Are you there, caller?
Yeah, I'm here, JP. Ray Brown here, buddy.
Hey, Ray. How you doing? We've got Julio Gaudreau on the line. Julio, Ray Brown is from Houston, Texas, and Ray Brown writes quite a bit on the Week Coach Tennis Radio Show. Coach Creasy, you know Coach Brown. Have you been able to listen to some of what we're talking about, Coach Brown, and do you have any reaction?
Yeah, I've been listening the entire time, as a matter of fact. There's some interesting things here that Julio, nice to meet you, buddy.
Nice to meet you, sir.
He's not aware of. You're not aware of. First of all, the USTA must function under federal statute, and it's Title 36 USC, U.S. Code 2205. That's a federal law. The federal law prohibits discrimination based on age, race. Let's see, there are two other things. economic status. Anyway, but the key point is you have to inspect sex. It actually spells it out, sex. So you're discriminating on the basis of age by having a 10 under. You're discriminating based on a socioeconomic status by the cost involved. You're talking about all these costs. So neither of those things are legal under federal statutes, and we're going to file a criminal, well, a complaint, which will go will not be a civil complaint. It's not a civil suit. It's a federal criminal statute against the USTA for violations of their civil rights. You cannot have age discrimination. You cannot have discrimination based on sex. You cannot have discrimination based on socioeconomic status and race. And the 10 and under, TAUT, absolutely discriminates on all those counts. Now, we're going to actually file a 14-point deposition to the United States Olympic Committee, which has total authority over the USTA under Title 36. And we're going to claim and point out where the USTA has violated 14 points of federal law and the bylaws of the United States Olympic Committee by implementing the 10 and under. Now, are you familiar with any of that? Are you familiar with the federal law that governs this sport?
No, sir. I let me clarify something. I'm here not on behalf of the USTA, but I'm here as a volunteer coach that happens to be a volunteer in a committee for the USTA, but I do not work on a higher basis for the USTA. So what I'm saying is my personal opinion, not what the USTA says.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough, buddy. Fair enough.
Let me ask you a question. Now it was interesting. I was actually very impressed, you know, your first argument that I got to hear in front of the USTA, you talked about the fact that it's your money, your child, and you want the freedom to be able to spend your money and do it your way. So you had that. And I was impressed with that. You've heard Coach Creasy. To him, it's all this idea about freedom. You've got Ray in Houston. What would be wrong with a dual system? Why would a dual system not help to alleviate? Why does the USTA want to even get into this sort of they seem to have dug their heels in with regard to this 10 and under thing, and there's no turning back.
Again, without my opinion, going in
prosecuting,
no.
Not speaking on behalf of the USTA, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I guess they felt that if they were going to do it, they would have to draw a line in the sand very firmly and say that this is how we're going to do it. And we want everybody playing, if they want to play in this age group, under this format.
Julio, do you know how this looks, though? It looks like there was impetus. All of a sudden, they had Rick Macy coming out, all sort of voluntary coming out. All of a sudden, stories about truckloads of green balls that need to be sold. All this, it looks like an economic thing or something. This is what got everybody enraged. And I'm glad that they're willing to talk about it right now. But like Dr. Brown was saying, you know, there's some serious things here. And all that people want to say is, look, don't force something down people's throats. Win the war of ideas. If it's better, it will fly on its own. And everybody knows it's the great, great, greatest teaching tool in the last 20 years because it brought the symmetry back into the game with these high-tech rackets. The USTA should have put their foot down on the high-tech rackets too, but it just messed up the game so bad. And that's a whole nother subject, Julio, but losing the symmetry took away from the art. You know, again, the art of the game probably more important than the sports science. That's what keeps people playing the game. It's not the competition. It's the artistic value and the beauty of the game.
Julio,
I agree with you.
Go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead, Julio. Did you hear what he said?
Yeah, I did, and I agree completely with you, Coach. And that might be why we're finding ourselves in this situation, because the game just lost its ability to develop players. Because it, like you said, that ball just gets on the player so quickly.
Yeah, it's like it'd be like using aluminum bats. All you know, aluminum bats for baseball and the big berthas and everything. It just really. You never want it where technology overcomes the skill level involved. I'm doing an article right now about the drugs that you get from playing tennis. Now, listen closely. you get dopamine, you should, from the ball striking, but it's been taken away by the high-tech equipment. You used to get more dopamine, a bigger dopamine rush with a wood racket on red clay, Julio. Remember with gut strings, man? And then you get adrenaline from competing, and you get endorphins from the training. And these are the things that keep people hooked. And but unfortunately, adrenaline is not as important as the dopamine, because you have every competitor only has so big a tank of adrenaline, and when you're out of competitive juices, you're out. We need to find a way to get the dopamine rush back into the game.
Coach Brown, are you still with us, Coach Brown?
I'm still here, buddy.
Now, he just – Coach Greasy's talking about the DEA now on the show. Can you believe this?
That's
the
right.
The DEA, Coach Brown.
Dopamine, endorphins, and adrenaline.
Coach Brown, your background is in neuroscience, Coach Brown. How valid are these things that Coach Creasy's bringing up with regard to these sort of chemical reactions going on in the brain?
One could probably argue the case of a person getting in the zone and seeing the ball the size of a grapefruit is a direct result of dopamine production in the brain. This is a true fact. The endorphins, well known as an after effect of exercise, absolutely factual. Adrenaline is not a good thing. Adrenaline, the human being, did not evolve to be able to stand more than 10 minutes of adrenaline. So because it begins to break down the vital organs in the body. And so stress hormones come from the game. But by the way, I want to point something out. The two things, Julio, we get our kids to volley and do all that stuff with a yellow ball from the time that they're 6 years old. They solve the problem for themselves. And so it's been a simple matter.
Julio, you're probably on the other end going, what in the world, you know, dopamine? These kids are 10 and under. Why does it matter? Freedom, why does it matter? You know, but Julio, what Ray just said there, he says he can do it his way over there. He wants to be able to do it his way over there. And you're saying, no, you got to do it this way here, and you got to compete this way here. Julio, why doesn't it seem the same argument that you made? I'm trying to understand why it's not a different argument on this.
What do you mean a different argument?
Well, I heard you so loud and clear. I loved what you said up there about, look, this is my money. I want to travel. I want to spend it. This is my family. I want to do this. And yet here we are, my son. I got a six-year-old, Julio. And believe it or not, right now, I just had him up in Chicago with Jack Sharp. And Jack Sharp said, no way should he be on a green dot ball or an orange ball or anything. He's six, Julio. He can rally 100 balls to the baseline. But why do I have to send him up to play with the 14 and unders? I mean, can you imagine a six-year-old playing against a 13 or 14-year-old? I mean, come on. Why do I have to do that with him?
But, JP, I mean, I'm giving you my opinion. This is not on behalf of the USDA. If you go play a bullfrog level tournament in the southern section, you play regular yellow ball on 12s. You don't play green dot. So they're 12 and under competition for the most part. I believe that maybe some states have adopted some level 4s and level 5s where they play green dot. But level 3s and above and 12s are all regular ball. They're not green dot.
Well, I mean, Julio, there's maybe, what is it? Is there, I think there's either 6 to 8 bullfrogs in the southern in the whole of the southern section, and I think there's probably 400 or 500 level 4s and level 5s in the southern section. I mean, the mass of the tournaments that he would be playing in, it's all going to involve either orange or green dot stuff. He's not going to, I mean, you know, if he's going to work his way through and learn how to play tennis, he's going to be doing it under your direction, Julio, because, you know, you like it and the USTA likes it. Dr. Brown or J.P. Weber or Coach Creasy or any of these other guys, we all got to do it your way. And it just seemed kind of interesting to me. Your whole argument in front of the USJ was, I should be allowed to have the freedom to do it a certain way. Can you stay with us longer?
I can stay a little bit longer. When they call me on, I'll tell you I got to go and then I'll go. But, again, this is not something I mandated. I'm just a part of a part of the process. I'm just like you and like Coach Creasy and Coach Brown. I just decided to embrace it and get educated with the system and how it works, and I'm making the most out of it. I'm just another tennis coach that happens to be a volunteer on a committee that deals with 10 and under.
And is there any chance that we could entertain the idea of doing a dual path? See how it works.
That's something that will actually go to the junior comp committee. It wouldn't have anything to do with the 10 and under committee, which is the one that I'm the chairman of. It would have to go to the people in charge of how kids compete. And I'm not on that committee at all. Yeah, that wouldn't go to me.
Coach Brown, all this committee this and committee that, does that affect now tell me about this, Coach Brown. You've got a lawsuit that you're going to take on the 10 and under thing. Some people might say, whoa, that's a big step there, Coach Brown. These are just 10 and under kids. Why are you intent on a lawsuit?
Well, the word lawsuit is not exactly that's usually refers to civil actions. We're not carrying out a civil action. This is a U.S. statute. This is a statutory action. But there are three things I want to point out about Julio. Playing up, asking a child to play up is a disservice to the child. You have no right to ask. The analogy is boxing. You got a 10-year-old, and you say, okay, you want to have him play up to 12-year-old boxing. Well, tennis, boxing is probably the closest thing to tennis in this eye-to-eye combative sport. Size matters. Intimidation matters. So when you ask a 10-year-old who is not as mature as a 12-year-old to play up, you're asking the opportunity to destroy that child's self-confidence and all the time and money they went in. On the other hand, if you say, okay, well, you have to regress, you're asking the child to go backwards, like a child asking a child in the seventh grade to go back to the sixth grade, psychologically damaging. So that is what we call restraint of competition. The second thing, and that's the psychological damage. The other thing is the green ball, if it bounces 53 inches from 100, it's very close to a standard ball, which bounces 55. However, if you teach these kids to approach the net and do all these things you'd like them to do, it doesn't scale up. Once they get to the high-tech rackets and the fast ball, you go to the net, it's the two-edged sword. You're just as likely to lose. In fact, you're more likely to lose in today's game because of the tremendous ball speeds, which it can exceed over 80, 85 miles an hour and stay in the court. So if you learn to be a good net player and all that stuff from a green ball, it does you no good. When you move to the yellow ball, it's obsolete. It's gone. So
yeah, Julio, this weekend we had a guy in here, Ned Caswell. We had a guy in here, Ned Caswell, this weekend, Julio, and sort of, you know, it didn't rub me the wrong way. It just sounded different than what I had been hearing from, you know, my entire life in tennis. He's talking about the fact that anybody coming to the net anymore, it's over with. It's not going to happen anymore. So if we're doing this to teach them to come in, what about that, Julio? You know, you've got accomplished coaches like Coach Caswell at the Baylor School who say, you know, if it was better, why doesn't Federer come in? He certainly could if it was better. But he says nobody comes in anymore, Julio. That's not part of the game of tennis.
I disagree. I think that the game will find a cycle again, my personal opinion, where you're going to see some people coming in. And this is something that we're going to have to wait until 7 to probably 10, 15 years from now to evaluate whether it was something that actually worked or didn't. I mean, right now we're all in a situation where we're presented with this. And like Coach Brown, Coach Creasy, and myself, as independent coaches, we're having to make a choice of whether we think it works or whether it doesn't. And based on that, then we choose to support it or be against it.
Well, I think there's a more serious issue there, Julio. You're talking about risk. You're talking about parents spending enormous amounts of money, risking money on an untested idea. It doesn't meet the test of time. You're saying they should spend, and by the way, a parent can spend as much as $25,000 a year, a serious parent. So you're asking, wait 10 years. That's $250,000 that parent may have to invest to find out that you're wrong. That's just not reasonable. You've got to have a test of hypothesis that says this tout idea better be 98% correct to ask a parent to be gambling that kind of money.
Coach, if everything in the world revolved around the statement you just made, we would not have iPhones or computers by now yet. Because somebody has to...
No. Look, I'm the technology person here. I spent 33 years in intelligence and high technology, and I know this business.
And I'm telling you, there's no relationship. You don't go in. You have never. You have no idea what it takes to present a proposal to an investor about a new technology idea. Man, they put you through the ringer on a level you cannot imagine, unimaginable. And I'm telling you, when they go to put their money on the line, they are darn sure that's most likely going to work. And that's an investor. That's a person who's a venture capitalist. Parents are not venture capitalists. So there is no connection, there is no relationship whatsoever between the technology world and what's going on here in the tout.
Well, let me take a we're gonna switch real fast. We're gonna take a commercial break and we'll be right back. And hopefully Julio, you can stay. Julio, you may have to leave, but I've gotta get this. I'm up.
Julio, don't leave, man.
Don't leave us, Julio. Don't leave us.
Really
I'm hanging around.
Okay,
yeah, man, it's awesome. Thank you, Julio.
Ray, you stay too.
Yes, Julio, just support me.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
Charge with the guys. That was you, Coach. Was that you? Was that William Creasy? Do you have Scottish background in you?
Oh my!
Let me bring everybody back on here. Let me. Is everybody still with us? Julio, are you still there?
I'm still here, but they're boarding, so I'm
boarding.
Go here very shortly.
Hey.
Let me let you have before you board. What do you want to tell us? What, Julio? You're talking, hey. Coach. You got William Wallace there, Creasy. What would you say to him and Coach Brown as you head off back to Mississippi?
Gentlemen, with all due respect, I mean, you guys are superb. It's been my personal opinion that what the new system is doing, it's allowing me to train the player
and at an early stage of development, actually going to competitions and use the skills that we develop in an open environment because we're competing with them. Where in the past I found that these were skills that I could develop in a closed environment, in a lesson environment, but that the kids physically could not really use until they were in their second year in the 14s or until they got into the 16s. To actually use the skill sets in match play, because at the early stage, especially in the 10s, it was too easy to neutralize because of the lack of size and how big the court was and how big the racket was and how high the ball bounces for them to actually do anything more than simply stay back at the baseline and see who can play the best defensive game. I'll leave you guys with that, and it's been an honor, and I hope that at some point in time I get to run into Coach Creasy and watch him work and see what he does. And Coach Brown, I, if it's okay with you, I would love – I have family in the Houston area that just relocated there. When I come down, I would love to, if I can, give you a call and maybe visit with you. And, JP, thanks a lot for having me. It's been an honor.
Likewise.
Julio, will you come back sometime? I've got your number now. Can you come back?
Anytime you want me, JP, I'm available. And if you can tell, I have a high level of passion for the sport of tennis. I got an undergrad in psychology and an MBA in marketing. So I teach tennis because I like it, not because I have to.
Julio, that's awesome. I'm so impressed with the man you are and the passion that you exude. And this is what it's about, and these are the kind of discussions we need to have. God bless you, man. And
thanks,
you and your family.
You
all right.
Thanks,
well, Julio. We'll catch you later, Julio. Ray, are you still with us? Ray, are you still with us?
Yeah, you're welcome anytime. Tell him he's welcome anytime to come see us. He's
yeah, I think he'll do it. I think Julio would do it. I'll tell you, though, guys, I'm just sort of stumped.
That's impressive.
But I'm still stumped.
No defensiveness on this guy. Just passion and belief. And it doesn't matter what angle you come to something from. This is the way you're supposed to battle with ideas. And this is the way it's supposed to be done. You know, this is exactly... And my hat off to Julio. Awesome. Awesome.
I think it's great. But I was very impressed with him up in front. He's up there in front of the USTA, the little guy up there in front of, you know, the whole podium there. You know, Gordon Smith's got about 6'8 or something like that. Julio's down there. And the thing is though Julio was expressing his idea that he should be free to do what he wants to do. And yet on this particular point, I find that he's not so free. Ray, hold on a second. Let me see if I've got one more caller here with us. I've got a 503 number that's been listening now for quite a while. Let's see if they want to come on.
Sure.
Is this the 503 number?
Yes, this is Brian Parrott calling in, guys.
Coach Parrott, you've got Ray Brown, Coach Creasy. We have got an intellectual base here, tennis-wise. Boy, I tell you what, we can solve some problems here tonight. What do you say, Coach Parrott? How you doing up there?
Well, good. I'm just curious, after this most recent listening session, how close are the USTA from backing off on the fact that there are, you know, 1,000 kids in the country that are capable of playing with the yellow ball and they should be allowed to do it? How close are they of backing off on their mandate?
Oh, they're not. I don't think it was the topic of this forum, was it? A few people peripherally wise tried to bring it up. Coach, what'd you think?
We talked a lot. Brian, you'd be interested. You know, the college situation, how that is the necessary synapse from juniors to moving on. And, you know, I brought up a point that at 15, 16, to 17, where that's where we're losing our kids. We talked about tournaments. You know, the importance of not dumbing down the tournaments. The one thing about the tournaments, people don't understand the difference between equality and equity. You know, equity means that everybody has equal opportunity. Equality means that, you know, I mean, that's what the problem we have, Brian, is, you know, participation trophies, and we've just dumbed down achievement. I'd like to make this statement, and this is what I really realized. I'd love to get your thought and raise. I never thought in the history that our society would be dumbed down because of too much information. There's so much information out there. People don't know what is true, what is not. It's like drinking water from a fire hose. Nobody has discernment anymore to tell the difference between a diamond and a rhinestone. But likewise, and here's the point, no one understands either that achievement and high excellence needs and achievement needs and the need for excellence, that it would be dumbed down as well by too many opportunities. People think opportunity, 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 too many opportunities, too many participation trophy, these fake national tournaments, Brian, we talked about those. You know, but all these things dumb down our children and dumb down excellence. And that point was brought up, and but not so much on the green balls, you know. And so, you know, it was darn good, though. The whole atmosphere is good, and we'll see what happens. But dang it, this is good stuff. I was, Ray, I you'd have been impressed. I wish you were there. You need to go to these things.
Ray, hold on, Brian, what did you... Actually, I want to get Ray. Are you still there?
I'm here, buddy.
Let me ask, did you hear? And I would love to hear from you, from a learning standpoint, Ray. Did you hear? Coach Creasy just gave an analogy. He said the kids are having to like drink water from a big old fire hose. The information is coming out so fast. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Coach Creasy made a brilliant statement that is dead on accurate. If you go on the web, you can find anything you want. But if you want the really solid, true, accurate information, you have to start digging into journals. And most people can't tell one wine from water because of the volume of information that's out there. And I think the coach has hit the nail on the head. And it's sort of ironic that we have so much information. A lot of it is not information. We can't tell the difference between real information and just garble. And it's hurting us. And
Brian,
this thing of dumbing down excellence, you cannot dumb down excellence. You cannot dumb it's life is still biological. It's still competition. It's still survival of the fittest. And if you're saying everybody's fit, you're just kidding yourself. If you don't create competitive opportunities that are legitimate, you don't have any sense of what you can do and even who the strong people are in your society. If it comes to a war, I really wouldn't want any of those yellow ball kids on my side. Like the way I put it is that if I have to run into a fire and save a baby, there are only certain people I would want to go with me. I'd be willing to have with me. And none of those people in the USTA who think that that's a good idea, I wouldn't want them going with me. I'd take you and I'd take Chuck and I'd take Brian.
The agenda, it really is, JP. And guys, that the agenda, we don't know why they're hunkering down so hard on this instead of listening to some of the learned coaches out there. And that's what the underside of, they do the talking points, and God bless them, man. It was good stuff. I mean, the way that they, again, no motion without emotion, and they let people speak their hearts, which never would have happened before.
What was the pithiest moment in that meeting? We've got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak. In 30 seconds or less, Coach Creasy, what was the pithiest moment you thought in that meeting tonight?
I like Jerry Baskin speaking out and talking. You know, the beautiful thing, Jerry came out and said, look, 7 or 8, 10 years ago, I don't know what it was, what he said 12 years ago, I really believed in the point system because that would be fair, but never did people understand that once they put the point system in, the fallout of people chasing the points and only the most wealthy kids would chase him around, and you could not grow vertically. You had to grow horizontally and chase the points. And again, look, you know, that's why you've got to walk slowly. Again, the worst thing I fight all the time is the daggone scoring system. But I always say bad rules are like bad politicians. You put them in and the fallout is going to last a long, long time. So it's going to take some leadership, and I think they're on the way.
Brian, you're up there in the frozen tundra of Iowa still?
Yes.
Up there in Iowa, you got about 30 seconds to tell me, a real hard 30 seconds. You're listening to us down here. What do you think about all this stuff?
Well, I'm glad that you guys are carrying the torch. I just feel badly for the talented and gifted 10 and under boys and girls that are not getting an opportunity to play.
Ray, you've got about 30 seconds. What do you have?
Well, what I can say is that we're going to set forth 14 points, and it covers many of the things that you've talked about. And the USGA is going to have to answer to these points under federal statute. They're not going to be able to weasel their way out of it. And by the way, as goes to town hall meetings, talk's cheap. Anybody can say, all right, tell me what you think. It's action that counts, and I don't see any actions.
Well, I'm gonna have to agree with Coach Creasy. I thought Jerry Baskin, you know, he tends to be a quiet person. I thought he was just fantastic. He made several just fantastic points. I was also very impressed, Brian Parrott and Ray, with Johan Kriek. Johan brought the point that there's a lot of smart, learned, experienced coaches out there, and they need to listen to those experienced coaches. That's it for our show this week. Coach Creasy, thanks for being here. Brian, Ray, keep it up. Keep up the good work. Talk to y'all later.
Okay.
All right. Sure, thanks, JP.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR10's radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR10's network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR10's radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR10's radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.